Hey everyone, this is Craig Horlbeck from the Ringer Fantasy Football Show. Join me, Danny Heifetz, and Danny Kelly every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to help you win your draft, win your league, and most importantly, avoid that last place punishment. Follow the Ringer Fantasy Football Show on Spotify.
It's the Ringer's Philly Special presented by FanDuel. April showers bring a loaded sports calendar, and FanDuel is the place to bet on it all. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and get paid instantly when you win. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
Hungry dogs run fast.
It's truly a Philly thing here.
Oh, welcome to the Ringers Philly Special. Funeral edition. The 2023 Eagles are dead. It's over. Shield Kapadia, joined by Ben Solak and ace producer Cliff Augustine. The Eagles, in what has to be, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, the worst loss of the Nick Sirianni era.
Without question.
You could go with the Super Bowl, but like you felt proud of the team if you're a fan after the Super Bowl for the most part. This has to be the worst loss of the Nick Sirianni era. To lose to Johnny Gans, your 10.5 point favorites at home. You have a 21-6 lead. You start the day. You have the number one seed in play. Most likelihood, you have the number two seed where at least you get a couple home playoff games. Then anything can happen. All that's still available to you. You got the Giants next week. And what do? You blow a 21-6 lead to the Arizona freaking Cardinals, who had the number two overall pick in the draft coming into the weekend. You lose, you get bumped down to the five seed. Now, in all likelihood, you're going on the road in the first round. If you get out of the first round, who knows? You're going on the road to Dallas probably in the second round. And then, the path, San Francisco, not happening. Not with this team that has lost 4 of 5, that is falling apart, that looks like a disaster. Ben Solak. How are you, my friend? Happy New Year.
It's not Happy New Year. We think that they're done. They think they're done, right? They very clearly think they're done. Like the Sidney Brown pick six, Kevin Byard hustling to go get a block downfield, the rookie's gonna score his first touchdown, first interception. Like that play, they had juice. The rest of the game, dude, they were up 21-6. I understand it. The second Julio touchdown, when they got up 21-6 going into halftime, Nick Sirianni, Jalen Hurts, a little shoulder bump on the sideline, Julio 2 touchdowns, go celebrate with the old guy a little bit. They had juice on 2 total plays. When this game was 21-21, they were like, oh, it's over, we lost. Like, they had nothing. Because there was no juice defensively, there was no energy defensively, because they're just getting big boys, right? This is the worst way to lose a game. They were sitting in light boxes and getting run on the whole game, right? This is an embarrassing, emasculating way to lose as a defense. And then offensively, right? They're okay, like we're going to run the ball. We're going to salt the clock away. But no, like there's penalties and then there's lost yardage and there's AJ Brown's pouting after every single possession and Devontae Smith has dropped. There's no gas, nothing. Like this didn't feel like a team. Oh, like, well, we've got star talent, so we win these games. It felt like a team that accidentally tripped Bass Ackwards into 21-6 and knew they were posing the whole time. Like when it went to 21-21, they were like, yeah, like that's how this usually, like there's nothing. They are so very clearly aware of the fact that they don't have it. And that's the part that watching them that's most scary. It's like, oh, they have star talent. Oh, they still score a lot of points. No, watch them play. They don't think they're good. And that's the long and the short of it.
That's well said. That's the story of the 2023 season, is a team, a fan base, analyst like sometimes tricking yourself into believing this team is something that it so clearly is not, now that we have a bigger sample. I mean, that you're right there. You know, all the vibes are after the Julio Jones. Okay, like let's get some good vibes going. Everyone says we look miserable. Everyone says we play with no joy. Hey, we're feeling good here. We're 21-6. It's New Year's Eve. Everything we want is still in front of us. And then what happens? Then you completely fall apart. Like that, I appreciate the effort on those, but that's not who you are. We've seen it too often this entire season, especially the last, whatever, 6 weeks of the season. That's not who you are. Even when you've won games, we look back now and we can say, all right, you know, yeah, we told ourselves a story. I was guilty of it. You were good. We did on this podcast. They're finding ways to win. Hey, these are good teams. They're pulling out wins at the end. They don't lose games. And then you go another week. And then, oh, that wasn't good. And then you go another week. Oh, that was really bad. And then you go another week. And this, my friends, feels like rock bottom. I was talking to Cliff before you came on. So this is an all-time bad loss, like this, for a regular season. I understand playoff, that's a different story. For a regular season game, this is a loss you will remember for a long time. This is probably the loss that will define, I think, the 2023 Eagles in your head in future years when you think about how this season went. This is a offense whose leading receiver today was Greg Dortch.
Offense, put some respect on the Demon D, Greg Dortch.
You have to. I mean, he cooked them. Absolutely. Can they trade for that guy? Next year, a team playing without its leading receiver in Hollywood Brown, a team whose left tackle went down during the game. DJ Humphries doesn't finish the game. A team whose defense came in ranked 32nd in DVOA. You were 10-1, and you can't put this team away. You've lost 4 of 5 with the stakes, I mean, on the line here. Like, how do you come out and do that? So yes, this is a funeral. This is a collapse for the organization. No question is off. You could come in with any hot take about job security, roster, personnel. Nothing is really off limits when you collapse the way this team lost. By the way, Souls, you know what is, again, the shame of it, if you're an Eagles fan? Not only were they 10-1, what do we talk about so much in the summer? Well, you know, injury luck, like that's not going to... If my counting is correct here, they had 20 of 22 starters healthy for this game. Zach Cunningham and Darius Slay were the two. You had all 11 starters on offense healthy in week 17, and you can't beat Johnny Gans? Oh my goodness, 2023 Eagles.
And this was like, you know how, like, coming into this game, I was like, all right, the Eagles are going to score a ton of points on offense because they want to beat Gans. This was a game of Gans' offense, the Cardinals being like, I know how to beat this Eagles defense, right? I know where they're liable. They left, they put two tight ends on the field, and the Eagles played 5 down front, and they left one of Josh Sweater, Hassan Reddick unblocked. They pulled a couple offensive linemen, and they climbed to the second level. And they said, you know those linebackers you have over there that are terrible? Yeah. Johnny Gans like, I know all about this. I lived this reality last year. I know exactly what to do in this environment. And they dominated up front. The time of possession really started to eat into the Eagles in the second half. You could tell the defensive line was bad on their legs. And we've talked about that for a lot of this season. But they weren't great in the first half. And then in the second half, when the plays really started to accumulate, they were struggling in a big way. Linebacker play, like I was rewatching this film during the 4 o'clock games. And I was like, someone's got to give me Nick Morrow's home address. I need an email address. I need to talk to this man. I was like in like a dark and dire place. And then I watched Alex Singleton make a nice play for the Broncos. And I was like, man, I miss Alex Singleton. And Alex Singleton, we are in the worst. We are in a headlock. We are in a full Nelson. We are done. We are got. Defensively, like it was Gannon knowing how liable this team will be, what they'll be able to lose to, given the way that they play defense. And like, Matt Patricia's got nothing, man. He has absolutely nothing. Like,
Shocker. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'm so surprised. Who could have seen this coming? The guy who was an abject failure at like his last three jobs, and the only time he had any type of success was when Billy Boy was holding his hand. That's the biggest indictment, honestly, of the 2023 Eagles and Nick Sirianni and this coaching staff and this organization, is that when things started to turn this year, their big move was replacing Sean Desai with Matt Frickin' Patricia. And in Matt Patricia's third game as the... He's still not the defensive coordinator. Okay.
Well, good. No, of course not.
Yeah, he's not. In his third game running the defense, Ben, this was the third worst defensive performance by any team in any game this season based on success rate. Think about that.
This was the Eagles' worst game by defensive success rate since the 2006 season.
Oh my gosh.
Joe. They had a defensive success rate.
It was worse than last year's Super Bowl.
Yeah. That's regular season and postseason. Last year, they had a defensive success rate of 40.8%. That's to say the Cardinals were successful on 59-60% of their plays. That is the worst performance, regular season or postseason, of an Eagles defense since a Colts game in 2006. Where I'm presuming they played Peyton Manning. Like... that by the way, Shield.
And you just played Greg Dortch. Listen, think of all the bad defenses you've watched. This is the whole Chip Billy Davis era. I mean, this is when this is Juan Castillo. This is every Juan Castillo game.
Right.
This is Johnny Kansas' first year.
Right. And this is with first round pick Jalen Carter, first round pick Jordan Davis, first round pick Nolan Smith is with contract
nine
extension
of 11
Josh
starter
White, contract extension Hassan Reddick, contract extension Fletcher Cox, trade Kevin Byard, right? This is with players. This is with guys. The previous second worst, by the way, was the Niners game this year.
Yeah.
They've had two of their three worst defensive performances, regular or postseason, in 18 seasons. In the last month of football.
The last 5 weeks.
This is a level of defensive failure that is unprecedented.
At least the Niners game, you know, in that stretch, you were going, all right, the Niners are doing this to everybody. I mean, this to me, and that doesn't make it better. It doesn't mean it's an excuse. But this to me is a different. The Cardinals did not punt in this football game. They had the ball seven times. They scored four touchdowns, two field goals, and had one fluky INT where the quarterback and the wide receiver were not on the same page. Great return, Sidney Brown. That's the one thing I will give anyone credit for this entire game. Great return, Sidney Brown. That was the only time they did not score. They scored on their final four possessions of the game. They had 32 first downs, tied for second most by any team in a game this season. You said it. The linebackers stink. The pass rush is ineffective. The two first-round picks were invisible in this game. The young defensive backs, they're not good. And the guy calling the plays, the guy you handed the keys to and said, maybe this will help us get over the hump defensively and let us go on a Super Bowl run, he has zero answers. So it's personnel, it's Howie,
so
it's Patricia, it's Sirianni, it's the individual play. You can name anybody associated with this entire defense and... they also deserve blame for this disaster.
I swear to you, Hassan Reddick had more reps and coverage in this game than he's had like a game this season. That's not a real stat.
I look that up every week because it feels like that every week.
I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure he did. It felt that way. They would get into five down fronts and the Cardinals would just go hurry up. And then they would spread the field out and they would flex Reddick out. And they did it for four quarters.
Oh my gosh.
They had a third down in the red zone where they went for like a pass rush front and they put Brandon Graham at nose tackle. Dead, you got nothing. You are making stuff up. A week ago, they did Nolan Smith as the one off-ball linebacker in the five down fronts. This week, they're doing five down fronts. They don't do it. They put Nick Morrow back there. They just threw it out. They did it for a week and then it's gone. And they're getting killed in these fronts. They have no solutions. They have no idea. The defensive coaching staff has absolutely nothing in their back. Just zero solutions to anything. And that's because the Cardinals, Michael Carter, Trey McBride, Elijah Higgins, Greg Dortch.
Oh
my God forbid this team runs into the Niners again.
Oh my God.
They're going to score 60.
Honestly, Lions, Cowboys, Niners. Seriously, this is against an offense that came in 26th in defensive DVOA. Okay, Hassan Reddick dropped, it looks like, seven times into coverage. This is according to True Media, PFF, which, you know, these could be updated during the week. But in my estimation, yes, that is a season high. Ben. So there you go. That was the card they're playing. Is let's drop him, you know, seven. Oh my gosh, seven times. And I'm sure he's thrilled about that, Hassan Reddick. So I don't even know what else to say about the defense. I mean, if you're saying you guys are being too hard on Patricia, look at the guys they're playing, putting out there. Yeah, I agree with that to an extent. I will say this, like, if you had a great defensive coordinator in here or a good defensive coordinator, you're not looking that bad against the Arizona Cardinals. I'm sorry, you're not. Yeah. I'm not saying you're going to shut them down. I'm not saying your linebackers are going to play well. They're not. They're going to get picked on. You're still going to have issues. You're not going to look that bad to the point where you just had the third worst defensive performance by any team in a game this season. So that is a complete disaster. The one button they pushed when things went to get sideways has been a complete disaster. So that's the defense. Let's take a break.
I got
back.
One more thing to say about the
sorry,
defense.
Go ahead. Yeah, we can still talk more about it.
Little quick swing out. Keely Ringo takes on the block, makes a tackle. Nice play. That's all I got.
Okay.
There was that, and there was the Reed Blankenship 3rd-and-2 stick. That's all I got.
That was nice. I mean, they still got it, I think, on 4th-and-1.
Yes,
right,
they did.
After that, yeah.
Those two plays, I was like, hey, that's all right. And then that's like Milton Williams sack. Wow.
Forced fumble. That was
pretty
nice.
Pretty good. That was okay. Nice. That's all I got.
Let me think. Josh Sweat, anything? No. Zon Reddick, anything? No. Jordan Davis, anything? No. Jalen Carter had a sack where this is the one thing I agreed with Moose Johnson on the entire game was that, yeah, I think Kyler Murray, like 100% maybe getting away from that sack. It wasn't really one of those where Jalen Carter planted him to the ground, but that's okay. You still get credit for it. I'm trying to think anything else. Cornerbacks, no. Safeties, you got the one good Blankenship. Byard, nice effort on the Sidney Brown.
Yeah, the old man's running. Wants to get the young buck touchdown. I appreciate it. Leadership.
Nice.
Keely got shafted on that one pass interference call. That sucked.
I agree. That was that's true. Refs. I think you get a good whistle here. You're probably winning this game. You're probably going to the Super Bowl. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back here.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
All right. We are back on the Ringers Philly special. I have no need to like appease anybody. I think there's nobody left who's optimistic about this team. Maybe you're listening and you're saying, no, we are. Yes. And they're still, no. Like
we have someone emailed you, myself and Sean and
but then he followed up. Did you see the follow-up email? Read the follow-up email on air.
this is the one from Mark Curtin.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Oh, I understand now. Okay. Never mind. I apologize.
What does it say? What did the second one say? Yeah,
the second one says, I take it all back, .. This team is cooked, ..
Yes.
Good title for the episode.
Loyal listener. Thank you, Mark, for the email. And I did appreciate that because I saw both of those at the same time. All right, a couple more things on the defense here. So, I mean, the story in many ways of this defense is just like up front was supposed to make up for the garbanzo beans elsewhere on the roster. And like, if that didn't happen, they're really like we knew they had nothing. There was nothing else that was going to happen. You get run on 40 times for 221 yards in this game, get absolutely pushed around. You have one sack and 3 quarterback hits. Now in this game, unlike other games where they lie to us and tell us the ball came out quickly when no, there are actually numbers to this and we can tell if it does or not. The ball did come out quickly in this game. 2.4 seconds because you don't have anybody who can cover anybody and you don't have a defensive coordinator that can make Kyler. I mean, Kyler Murray, this was a throwback to 2021, my old armpit test. Shout out to Johnny Gans. You know, yeah. You at least want the quarterback to have to like, you know, change his shirt at the end of the game. Maybe be glad that he threw on a little right guard. Or that, like, this was, I don't think Kyler Murray had much going on there in the underarm area after this game. He looked very comfortable back there. So defensive line has just completely underachieved. Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter combined in this, and they're not the only one, so I'm not picking on them, but this was just, I mean, Hassan Reddick, one tackle. That's his box score. Jordan Davis, one tackle. That's his box score. Jalen Carter had the one play, which we gave him credit for. I mean, think about that. Those three guys combined for three. They brought a player down three times total, and only once was it a quarterback. Those three players. Yeah. Those are three or four starters.
My quick read on the game, which I'll be curious to see what we see film-wise, I'll be curious to see what Sean thinks in the midweek show, is that Gans decided in the running game that they were going to pick on Reddick. And that they did so successfully. He'd be like, you know, again, like, that's Gans knowing the personnel from last year and being like, okay, we think we can move this guy off the ball. He can be our point of attack guy. And we can go at him. And then they did that for four quarters. So Reddick, he's going to justify not being the best run defender by his impact in the backfield as a pass rusher, which is harder to do when he's dropping into coverage seven times.
Yeah.
But he hasn't been bringing that, like, since he came back from thumb injury, had a couple good weeks, and then just has been really absent in the pass rush ever since.
I said this to Sean. Reddick still has one big contract probably left. If I'm Reddick and I'm being told to drop into coverage, I'm just pretending I didn't get the call. And I'm going to get the quarterback. I mean, are you serious? Everybody, it looked like, got pushed around. I mean, when they were doing replays, certainly the interior guys were getting pushed around. Linebackers, I mean, they just got nothing. Absolutely nothing at linebackers, safeties, everybody there. So when you get that type of defensive line performance, you really have no shot. Offensively, all right, let's talk about the offense here. It wasn't like they got limited opportunities, but it was 1, 2, 3, 4, I mean, 7 possessions in this game, and they scored 3 touchdowns. So statistically, it's 3 touchdowns and a field goal on 7 possessions is actually not bad. And it's actually 6 possessions. I mean, that last one, you get the ball with 32 seconds. So that's actually not bad output. Having said that, we all watch the game. We're not just looking at the numbers. And I know the one sequence that's going to be on everyone's radar. So let's get your take on this one. Okay. 1st and 20. Onside kick by Johnny Gans, which actually, if you listen to this, I have crushed Johnny Gans relentlessly. Yeah. I like that move by Johnny Gans, because you're saying maybe we surprise him and get the ball back. That's a win. Like, what are we playing for here? We got nothing to lose. Let's go try to win the game. That's a nice culture thing. That's something I would have given Dan Campbell credit for 2 years ago. So I like that. And then also, which is something he never realized as a defensive coordinator, is like game situation. Like, all right, even if they get the ball there, like, they're probably, our defense stinks. They're moving the ball. And so at least we'll give our offense another chance to get it back and score. So nice, Johnny Gans. Listen, you out-coached Nick Sirianni in this game. That was a nice job by Johnny Gans there. So he kicks the onside kick. Eagles recover it. They get a first down. Then they get a Jordan Mailata penalty. 1st and 20 from the Arizona 30 at this point. Ideally, obviously, in this situation, you want to run clock and either kick a field goal, score a touchdown with time running out, and you win the game. Okay, so that's what you want to do. Worst case scenario, you're already in field goal range, so just don't take negative plays, and at least you get a 3-point lead. First play, I believe, was a Hurts designed run for 4 yards. Second play, I believe, was a Hurts option run for 3 yards. And then 3rd and 19.
No, so the 2nd and 16 was for -3 yards, which Jalen Hurts.
Oh, it was. Okay.
Yeah, Jalen Hurts has 2 pullers to follow.
That's right.
And Buda Baker knifes a gap, but Hurts has blockers and space in an alley, and he does not take it. Just absolutely. And like, I'll be interested to see the end zone view. Maybe Baker is closer. Like, there's no way he's getting around Baker. 2nd and 16, they had exactly what they wanted, and Hurts decided to screw around behind line of scrimmage. I was screaming my head
off. So he didn't trust it. So he just slid down. Baker, I don't remember exactly.
Baker's getting, he like slides 3 yards behind because he tries to go and run away from Baker. If like Baker knifed through an A gap, the run's hit in C gap. You have to use your offhand, put your shoulder down, beat Buda Baker and go. But like, he hasn't done it pretty much all year. Either way, 2nd and 16, they have blockers. They have what they wanted on the play.
Okay, so you feel like when we watch that, that might be one where at least they're getting a positive gain. You set yourself up for 3rd down. Though instead, it ends up being 3rd and 19, and they throw a design screen to one Kenneth Gainwell, where Devontae Smith is blocking on this play. And according to Zach Berman on Twitter, Devontae Smith gets injured on that play. Devontae Smith in the locker room, on crutches, in a walking boot, on a play where he's blocking for Kenny Gainwell on third and 19 in the fourth quarter of this. I know third and 19 is tough. There's nothing in the playbook. Third and 19. I understand. You know what? You got A.J. Brown, you got Devontae Smith, you got Dallas Goedert, you got a top five offensive line, you got a quarterback who can create out of structure. You're going up against the 32nd ranked defense. Maybe you just try something. Maybe you at least put the ball in the hands of your three best players. Heck, maybe even your four best players would be fine with me in that spot. Maybe you still don't get it. Maybe it's the same outcome, but maybe something. By the way, you have like one of the best, like Jalen Hurts' numbers on third down and third and long are very, very good when you give him a chance to just create a little bit. You don't do that. Nick Sirianni said afterwards, wind was in our face, whatever. You wanted to get a couple yards.
In my face.
Oh my gosh. Worst. Yeah. Like Jake Elliott really cares about the freaking wind. Was it even windy
outside
today?
I paid my star receiver 4 years, $100 million, but the wind's in my face. So
there you go. So that's
really frustrating.
What did you think? Yeah.
So they have paired screens. Right, they have Gainwell at the bottom with two blockers, and they have AJ at the top, right, with one blocker. And so it's pick a side, and Hurts picks the Gainwell side, and the camera catches AJ afterward, and he's not stoked about that decision, as one could imagine, right? So it's not even like it's always Gainwell. Like, it looks like the top is active, from what I can tell. But like this is actually like live. Like, it's not just like a dummy thing. Like, you could throw this if you wanted to. You can't see enough on the broadcast copy to count the numbers and to know if Hurts threw to the right guy or not. I'm assuming that he just made the correct box count read. You'd like, you know, to maybe fudge it and force it to AJ instead of Kenny. Man, they trust Kenny. They sure do that. Oh, Kenny will get us out of a tough spot. They love a Kenny. You watch the Lions Cowboys game on Saturday, right? And the Cowboys have a lead and they're salting it away and they need to eat clock, but they're throwing the football over the yard and they end up having incompletions and it gives the Lions the ball back with clock. And so like there's ways that you over index to like, we trust our quarterback, we trust our receivers, and you just end up throwing it too much. Once you get to first and 20, and remember, it's still a tie game, there's still 4.5 minutes left, you can't turtle that quickly. You cannot go to the run. And like I said, on second and 16, they had what they wanted, but to go run, and then screen is functionally run, right? It's we know we're going to get a completion, we know we're going to be able to burn clock. Like, you're behaving as if you're already up three, and there's 2.5 minutes left. It is tied. There are 4 minutes left, and your defense is putting out a historically bad performance. You have to, like, you have to assume the Cardinals are going to score 7. Why would you believe anything otherwise? So it's bad situational awareness all the way across the board. From the coaching staff deciding to turtle, Hurts on second and 16, Mailata with the hold, which like Swift bounces. And so I give him a little bit of grace. Like that block is legal if Swift's staying to the inside. And when Swift goes to the outside, you don't know he's going to do that. All of a sudden it becomes illegal, but you got to let him go. You have to know here, like, priority is no penalties, no backwards plays. You're going to stop the clock, firstly. Secondly, you're going to put it in pass situations. So, like, Mailata mistake, Hurts mistake. And then you have that third and 19 where he chooses to throw to Gainwell. All of that is on coaching. They looked like a team that didn't know what to do on that drive, which is absurd because they're supposed to know what to do on that drive because they've been so good at it. They're so very much not themselves right now.
They've looked like a team that doesn't know what to do all season. Yeah. I mean, when you were just talking through that, I was thinking, I mean, what was the game a few games ago where they had a 3rd and 3 and they're throwing the go ball to A.J. Brown? Remember? Down the left sideline there.
Like, that was Cowboys game.
Cowboys game. They're doing that.
They had one of those in this game, right? 3rd and 5 from the 30, third quarter. This is their only punt of the day. They got zero blitz. And what they threw the Devontae go ball. And they hit him in the hands. But here's the thing about the go ball. Even on a good throw and a good catch and a good play, it's a hard connection to make. It's a lot easier to connect on, like, a slant. But no, like they tried.
Honestly, in this whole game, like, at least they tried to hit something downfield when a team hit them with a zero blitz. Finally, this entire I mean, just last week, right? 3rd and 20, and Jalen Hurts makes the 32-yard completion.
AJ Brown,
to AJ Brown. Oh my God, 30-20, incredible. This team not knowing what to do in these situations all season.
This goes back to like. I used the imagery of getting punched in the mouth a lot over the course of the last 2 years. And it's just that it feels like this Eagles team got punched in the mouth with Cowboys and Niners, and they're not going to be able to recover in time, right? Like they got hit. They didn't know what it felt like to be hit, and now they're scared, right? Now they don't feel the same, and they don't know how to get themselves out of it, right? This is why how you respond to these sorts of things legitimately is very legitimate. It's very meaningful, right? You have to know how to lose games and bounce back. Like, that's what makes some of these like great long tenured coaches so good, is that their team can have like two or three horrible games in a row, and then they can just dig themselves out of that trench, hit the reset button, and go back and win a game. It's a hard, hard thing to do. And the Eagles are showing they can't do it right now. Too young, leadership's not vocal enough, going back to like the Hurts thing. Sirianni's kind of, you know, okay, is he a, you know, just kind of like a fair weather coach? Like, whatever. You can, you diagnose it 10 different ways. They got punched in the face against the Niners, and then they got punched again by the Cowboys. They are reeling. They got, you know, little cartoon ducks and chickens going around their head, and they don't know how to respond.
Well, I think that's a good segue to the head coach here. I mean, I remember us distinctly having that conversation. I forget after what game it was, about, okay, now Nick Sirianni's facing some adversity. Has not happened since 2021, that first half of the season. Since then, pretty much smooth sailing. They fixed their season. They got to the playoffs. Next season, they come back with Jalen Hurts. They win every game. They're blowing teams out. They get to the Super Bowl. You're feeling good. You start this season out 10-1. And now look at what's happened then. Since they faced that adversity. Again, we talked about the Patricia Desai thing. Offensively, I don't care what you're doing, honestly, about against the Arizona Cardinals. I don't care what the numbers look like against the freaking Cardinals and the Giants. I still don't like the design, the structure, the play calling of this offense. You cannot convince me that they are maximizing the talent on the roster on this offense where everybody is healthy. You cannot convince me of that. I've watched every play live and on film all season, and I do not, and I watch other teams, and I do not believe that you are getting everything you can out of this offense. So you have that. Your move on defense backfires. How about the other stuff? Last week, you had the issues with the time management in the first half. This week, you're wasting timeouts left and right in the second half. I mean, that is also the coach's job, the process stuff. That's an issue. Does the team play with any joy? We mentioned it, like, all right, the Julio Jones touchdown. All right, maybe. I mean, I don't look at this team. They've been miserable for weeks now. As soon as things went sideways, they've been miserable. And I have to believe the volatility of the head coach does not help with that. When he's yelling at people, when he's puffing his chest out, when things are going well, that's fun. That's fine. I enjoyed it. I like how, you know, 31 other fan bases dislike the guy. But then you also have to have something in your pocket for when things are going poorly. And we just have not seen that at all. And so now, like, if you zoom out a little bit, and again, well, you know, we'll talk about next week, and then we'll talk about the playoffs when they come. We will talk about those games. But I think if you're zooming out, and I know fans do this a lot, I like to do this a lot. I mean, what does this look like here? Like, what are the concerns long term with the head coach, with the coaching staff? I mean, you can paint a pretty bleak picture here that this season ends in either the wild card round or the divisional round. And then who knows? Does Jason Kelce want to come back to this, given how the second half of the season went? Or does he say, you know what, all good, my time has come and gone? You have no plan at defensive coordinator. What are you doing at offensive coordinator and offensive coaching staff? You cannot just run it back the same way you have here. How much are Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie looking at this going, this team is underachieving versus, well, we put this, helped put this team together, and this is kind of what it was going to, you know, regress to in the end? What is that friction like between coaching staff and front office and personnel and players? All these things start happening when things go poorly. So that's kind of where I'm at zooming out with this team. Again, even though they've clinched a playoff spot, they're going to be playing in the playoffs. We'll see what happens. But man, there are so many questions that have just been opened up here and are fair to ask, quite frankly, given the way the last five, six, 7 weeks have gone.
This is a poorly coached team. Right. Offensively, defensively, scheme-wise, talent-wise, culture-wise, poorly coached right now, right? Nobody is helping.
I don't even think that's controversial. Yeah, I mean, I would wonder if anyone listening would listen to that and be like, I mean, here's what you can do fairly. You can point to Nick Sirianni's overall record, and no one's taking that away from him.
Yeah.
Like, historically good, but I'm with you. Like, that, when you said that, I wasn't like, ooh. I was like, poorly coached, obviously. Teams. Yeah.
There's nothing in the cupboard, right? Like, the best coaches bring out their best stuff, and then there's a counterpunch from some defense, from some offense, 4 weeks into the season, 6 weeks into the season, and they're either ahead of it or they adjust to it. The best coaches are fluid. They're versatile. It's not that they run things, that they're smart guys. They have solutions. You want a full cupboard. You want a full toolbox. Offensively and defensively, they got nothing. They just have no solutions. Right? We run the same stuff into the same stuff. We lose the same ways. We win the same ways. Hope we're good enough today. And like, the motivation is at an all-time low. The target distribution, and like, okay, everybody's happy, and like, the effort and the culture, that's at an all-time low. So how do you solve the problem? Like, unless it's unbelievable culture management, hunky-dory, we get all the team leaders together and the captains together and we make everything right and we have a renewed commitment to being good at football, then you have to solve it schematically. You have to find ways to say, okay, like, everybody's feeling funky right now, but we're going to do these few things on offense, these few things on defense, and it's going to wake us up. We're going to get a sack, and we're going to get a pick, and we're going to get an explosive, and we're going to get a touchdown, and we're going to feel right again. And they just don't have, they've had so long to show that they have that, and they don't. So they're not a well-coached team. So if you're giving me keys to the kingdom in February, I'm absolutely making a defensive switch. I'm probably making an offensive
switch. Can you imagine if they didn't? What if they just try to sneakily announce Matt Patricia's coming back as defensive coordinator?
Right, and even like Patricia's defensive coordinator, Patricia can't call plays. I will personally take the NovaCare complex apart brick by brick if Patricia was calling plays in 2024. You will not be able to keep me out of the facility. You erect whatever security fences and measure, like get guard dogs. I'll be there every night taking a cinder block out of the facility until it crashes. Patricia will not call plays for this defense in 2024. But you also need a different schematic approach, because this schematic approach is awful, right? It requires so much better linebacker play than they have. Like, if you're going to play with linebackers this bad, you have to play Vance Joseph defense or Wink Martindale defense, or we just blitz guys with reckless abandon defense. You cannot ask them to do things because they are incapable of achieving it. So you need a schematic change as well as a play caller change. And then offensively, I think you still need one on that side of the ball as well. I think system-wise, you can stay in the same stuff. But Brian Johnson, like I said, doesn't have solutions. So now you're asking Sirianni, a year after replacing his offensive coordinator and his defensive coordinator, to potentially do it again. He's now going to be deep in his bag of connections, right? Like, who does he know? Who does he trust? Who can do work this for him? And you're also, and this is like goes back to some of the Howie stuff and the Jeff Lurie stuff, the Eagles are constantly presenting themselves to the general coaching public as like not the best place to coach. You don't have as much control over the roster as the coaching staff often does. And the Eagles have shown they're very quick to turn around on guys. And so I think it's going to be hard to get a good OC and hard to get a good DC in the building. And that's on Sirianni to make sure he gets that done. And so I think you're going to see coordinator changes on both sides of the ball, assuming they finish the season the way we think they will, which is 5 seed, go to Tampa Bay and lose to Baker Mayfield, at which point I will become rabid. I will be a feral dog. I'll be foaming at the mouth in this podcast when Baker Mayfield bounces me from the playoffs, right? Let me make that very clear. I will be snarling and woofing and howling.
To the coaching, I don't know that I totally agree with like being able to attract top coaching talent. I actually think that like league wide, when you look at the other situation, like I think there is actually appeal here, especially offensively. You're going to be able to call the plays for an offense that has AJ Brown, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert, Jalen Hurts, and at least a decent offensive line. Like that's a nice spot to be in compared to a lot of your other options. If you are, you know, a good play caller, a good offensive coordinator, whatever. Now you might look at it and say, well, Sirianni is designing the offense. Like, and I, you know, you could be like a potential coach and say like, I don't like what he does. I think that sucks. And I want to revamp it. And like, is that going to work in terms of working with him? I think that's fair, but I don't think that's a bad situation. And defensively, you get handed the keys. I mean, really from the head coach to coach the entire defense and implement any system you want. And you're coming after the team just fired, right, replaced Sean Desai and went to Matt Patricia. So it's like the bar is relatively low on that side. I mean, it was just, listen, like, if Johnny Gans was transparent, Vic Fangio would be their defensive coordinator. Like, he was very willing, you know, he found this to be an attractive situation. So I think you're okay there. Now, I think the other thing you said, though, hit the nail on the head. Like, is Sirianni really presenting his options to Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie about what he wants to do? I would say probably not. I would say it's more of a Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie saying, here are some people we like, respect, know, think could be good, give them a call and see what you think. Obviously, it's not just one or the other. It's going to be collaborative, but like those are some tricky conversations. If Nick Sirianni's bringing someone on, he doesn't know, he doesn't trust, it doesn't go well. Well, now, how does that look? But then again, if you're Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie, you're looking at this going like, the guy needs help. Like, we need to help this guy because he doesn't have answers. So I understand it from their perspective as well. So those are some of the very, very big questions facing this football team. Like, I don't think, you know, in terms of leadership and all that, like, I know someone was tweeting at me, like, they quit. Like, I generally just believe that, like, the professional football players I've been around, like, work hard and try hard pretty much like, yeah. I don't know, like 99% of the time. So I don't like a lot of times it's just the team isn't good enough and or a player's not good enough and you can say they quit. Like that's usually not what it is. So I don't see it that way. But I do think players want coaches who they know are going to make them individually better and give the team a chance to win. Like those are the things that matter above all else. And if you're AJ Brown, I mean, if you're some of the other players on this roster, do you, how could you feel that those things you want from a coach, those needs you have from a coach are being met? They are not being met right now, which is why I agreed with your overall assessment of Nick Sirianni. So it's good. It's suddenly, I think, going to be a very, very, very interesting offseason. Again, you get one more game next week, and then we'll see what happens in the playoffs. You at least get to watch a playoff game for better or worse. Maybe you get to watch a couple. Who knows? I'm not bullish on this team turning things around, making some type of surprise run. I don't think you are. I don't think probably 99% of our listeners are either. So that's just kind of where things stand. So I think it's okay to look ahead a little bit. All right, Cliff was in attendance for this game. Longtime listeners of the Ringers Philly special will know Cliff was also in attendance last week when this team played the New Orleans team. Poor Cliff. I mean, the guy just wants to go to one game a season, have a good time, and cheer on the team that he loves. And these are the two games he's been stuck with the last two seasons. Cliff, I hesitate to even ask, but what was the experience like for you at the link today?
First of all, it was just downright just depressive. Like the whole game, first of all, they went up 21-6. It was cool. Everything was fine. The crowd was cheering. Everybody was going crazy, especially after the Sidney Brown pick six. And then it just all goes downhill. There's no stops. There's nobody going crazy. I do want to give a shout out to Bucks County Glass, Megan Chow for the seats today. I had a great time, great experience. It was awesome.
Cliff always getting the plug in. Nah. All business.
Got a shout out to good folks over there, man. Shout out to Bucks County Glass. But yes, I mean, how do I end up going to these games? Like the year before last season in 2021. I went to the Chiefs game where they couldn't stop.
Oh my God. That was like this game. Not a lot of possessions, and every possession ended in a score.
They did not punt. Every possession pretty much ended in a score. Kyler Murray's running all over the field. Like the crowd, the life is taken out of the crowd, man. People are in the crowd just sitting there like, yeah, this team stinks. I'm walking towards the subway. Hey, it's over. It's New Year's. Let's hit the liquor store before it closes and let's close out the year the proper way. But, man, listen, I wanted to come in here and do a Gannon Watch. I had people ask me today, yo, Cliff, what's up with the Gannon Watch, man? You want to do something. I said, oh, don't worry. After this game, after the results, we'll see what we can do. Listen, we got to have a discussion, man. It's Sirianni Watch right now, you know? Like, I know y'all just did, you know, a little briefing on him, but he's on notice right now. Things aren't looking too good for our boy Nicky Sirianni. So I just want to know, like, overall, collectively – And this is just the vibe I get. People are questioning his, you know, his leadership, his, you know, what he brings to the table as far as an offensive mind. And like you just laid out, can he bring a different offensive mind in here? That's not Brian Johnson, who clearly is inept at calling plays. And that's unfortunate because I had high hopes for him. But, you know, is Sirianni's job on notice? Because like you said, Jeffrey Lurie in the blink of an eye can get rid of somebody. Like, well, I don't want to make it sound, you know, crazy, like he's part of the mob or something like that. But you know what I mean. Like, you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I got you.
Like he will move on from you. Like, I remember when Andy had got fired, I believe back in 2012, they were like 4-12, I believe, at the end of the season. And the rumblings were, you know, Andy was going through some personal things were happening, but it all happened really fast. Like, that happened within like a day or two where they're just like, all right, this is probably it for Andy Reid, because people thought he was going to be back. He was with the Eagles organization for such a long time. And then Chip Kelly thing, you know, he didn't even finish out his second or third season.
Third year. He got fired during his third year.
Fired during Pat Shurmur. I remember where I was when I got the notification. Story for a different day.
They had the video of him hopping on the jet with his dog and his girl and just flying right out of Philly. And then Doug Peterson won the first Super Bowl in franchise history. And they moved off him kind of fast, too, after that whole debacle with the Washington Commander football team, whatever they were called at the time, when players were being benched towards the end of the game. And I mean,
the Sunfeld game, I forgot.
And listen, I'm not saying Sirianni's going to get fired. I don't believe that for a second. I mean, the dude does have a good record here. But listen, man, he's been exposed this whole season, like point blank period. And we got to have that discussion now. Like, if something crazy happens in the playoffs where, let's say they, you know, it looks like they're going to have to go to New Orleans, I believe, right now.
New Orleans or Tampa.
They go there and lay an egg in one of those two, you know, mid to mediocre teams. The light is going to be on Sirianni for sure, to me.
Yeah, I said I was going to be a feral dog if they lose to Baker in the playoffs. If they lose to Derek Carr, I will not speak English on that pod, dude. I will be unintelligible.
Yeah, I think like the Peterson thing, the Peterson thing, it's like, remember, at the end of that season, he does the press conference at the end of the season, and you're like, okay, I guess, you know, he's coming back, and then it takes a while, and it's a week later, and it's like, wait, is he coming back? And then they had this long meeting, and it's like, no, he's not coming. And they can never just do things cleanly, like with the Desai thing. Like,
it's always nasty.
They're not a Desai. Listen, I can understand it, because I'm not a decisive person. I wouldn't like the confrontation either, but it's like, listen, you're a professional organization. It's like, this guy's, we're moving on. This guy's fired. Like, that's, they wait so long. And actually, they were scrambling. That led to them being scrambling for Sirianni. Remember, no one was interviewing Sirianni. He was on vacation and they interviewed him. So it was like a very herky-jerky thing. I don't think this offseason, no. I mean, I would be
Sirianni's
absolutely,
job is very safe to me.
Yeah, his, I mean, he, come on, he got to the Super Bowl last season.
He deserves the opportunity to fix this.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, that would be, I can't even imagine, it would have to be some type of like player-led mutiny, or it would have to be like, you know, like mutually, like Sirianni's like, I want to get out of it. It would have to be something crazy like that. I don't think it's just a, hey, you are being fired because of your job performance. It does, though, like, spin it forward a year from now, and when we're on here talking about this, and if the team's not playing, like, I don't know, if the team's like 8-8 or something at that point, now all of a sudden you're going, okay, with the way 2023 ended, and now what 2024 looks like. Like, so we've had this conversation before. Is Sirianni going to be more like an Andy Reid, where he's here for over a decade, and man, this is just the guy for a long time? Or is he going to be more like a Doug Peterson, or for the older heads out there, more like a Dick Vermeil, somebody who peaks very early, gets burnt out? I mean, like, you can kind of see the parallels there, that profile. So he's won a lot of games. I'm not saying he's like a terrible coach, incompetent, anything like that. This has not been a good season for him. I agree with you, Cliff. I agree with you. So, I mean, we've gotten answers. Is he a special offensive schemer? No.
This is basic high school stuff that he's running to me, by the way.
Yeah.
Little bubble screens and no motion, just, you know, out of shot.
And no plan B. Every great coach has to have a plan B. Even the ones like, I'll go into a season not sure about something, like Mike McDaniel this year. I know they didn't play well today. Maybe a bad example, but like, what does it look like the year after? You know, because we lived this with Chip Kelly. Year one, holy cow, he's taking revolution, taking the league by storm. And then year two, it looks different. And then year three, it's a disaster. Like, we see this in the NFL all the time. So I think that's where we're at with Sirianni. We'll see. We'll see what the next, maybe 2 weeks, maybe more than that, look like. But I will say, I do think Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman will look at this with like a not, with a, I'm trying to think of the, they will not be charitable with their view of how Nick Sirianni has coached this football.
For sure. And can Howie do one thing for me, please? Just one thing. Can you bring in a linebacker for this Philadelphia Eagles team? I saw Shaq Leonard basically get crossed up at the 1 yard line, do a whiff right in front of the pylon and get scored on. And I said, oh man, immediately I said, he's washed. Like, it's sad to see his drop off. Cause that dude was a dog back in Indy. And it's over for him.
This was the worst game I think Morrow's played since he got here. Morrow was just, cause he was their linebacker in their 5-1 stuff. And he was just guessing and hoping and Olaying and just like praying that James Conner picked wrong. And then they can't bring Conner down, cause they're not big enough. Conner's bigger than everybody in the back seven. It's bigger than half their edge rushers, man. If this game makes Howie invest in a real linebacker, it's worth it. hot take. I will be glad to have sat through it if it means I finally get to watch one good linebacker play in Philadelphia for the first time since I was 9, watching Jeremiah Trotter fly around. Please, God, give me a linebacker.
Axeman. All right. So
you don't remember Mark Simoneau then?
I remember Simoneau attempting an extra point.
No. Okay. All right. There you go. We will end on Mark Simoneau. So listen, hang in there, Eagles fans. It could always be worse. I just saw David Tepper throwing a drink at a Jaguars fan. So Jeffrey Lurie's not going to do that. Jeffrey Lurie, it does always start with ownership, and the guy does want to win. That is priority number one. I don't know that he doesn't argue with the decisions he makes to have this team win, but at least he does want to win. He has a track record of winning. It doesn't look great now. They still won a lot of games this year. You'll get a playoff game to watch, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. And then we will look ahead to the off.
Chill, and Ben, real quick. Can I ask y'all a question, man?
What's up?
Yeah. What is your Philly sports New Year's resolution? Like, what do y'all need to see out of the city this year? I know mine.
I resolve to not care. I resolve to feel nothing. Cliff, when I saw the OG trade to the Knicks, I like got legitimately fired up for like 3 minutes. And I was like, no, you said don't believe in the Sixers. You said don't care. Don't do it. My resolution is to care less.
My resolution is please, Sixers, get the hell out of the second round. Just do me.
I was going to say, is it the second round or further? Do you want to be greedy? No. Yeah, I would agree with that. Get out of the second round is probably a good one. Yeah, I think that's probably the best one. Phillies win the World Series? Is that asking too much?
Yeah, I was about to say, that might be asking too much.
The bar is high. Like anything else than that, I'm going to be mad and disappointed. So, those would probably...
But with that being said about the Phillies and Sixers, we're going to turn that up as 2024 hits coming up here. We've been really focused on the Eagles, but we got to turn up the Phillies and Sixers.
We might only have two more weeks, Cliff.
Yeah. So and then knows, you know, we got to hop on the Flyers bandwagon too. Don't forget about them.
All right, there you go. All right. Yeah, I did see. Flyers are playing well, right? People are jumping on the Flyers bandwagon.
A couple people asked me about
Cliff
lead
those discussions. I'll just be the guest. I'll produce, you host those. We'll figure it out. All right. Thank you to Cliff Augustine. Thank you to Ben Solak. Thank you to everyone who's listened all year long. A lot of hours, a lot of minutes, a lot of seconds, a lot of downloads, a lot of reviews, a lot of ratings, a lot of subscriptions. We appreciate all of them. We'll be back during the week. Talk about who knows. There could be some fallout from this game, with the locker room, with the coaches, with everything going on with this team. So we'll get to all of that and much, much more. Happy New Year's to everybody. We'll talk to you soon on the Ringers Philly Special. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Kentucky, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona, 1-888-789-7777, or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700, or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana, visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia, or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts, or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.